and thank you for supporting public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday, and Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here. He'll have an ethics board update and the need for election inspectors. Officials in the town of Forestburg are pushing back against accusations made by the New York Office of the Attorney General that the town passed a zoning law that discriminates against Jewish property owners. We'll have an update from Philip Pantuso at the Times Union about the zoning dispute. And John Cash is a master caricaturist whose works have appeared in the New York Times, The New Yorker, Wall Street Journal, and at the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery. An exhibition of his work is currently on display at the Wayne County Arts Alliance, and culture reporter Valerie Manzi will have a preview. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Hurst. Stocks opened sharply higher on Wall Street this morning as the Labor Department reported a slowdown in hiring last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow jumped about 500 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added 175,000 jobs in April, the smallest gain in 6 months. Most industries continue to add workers during the month, but at a slower pace than earlier this year. Wage growth also slowed in April. Average wages were up 3.9% from a year ago. That's likely enough to outpace price increases and boost workers' real purchasing power, but not so high as to spark fears of further inflation. Overall, the cooler jobs report is likely to be welcomed by the Federal Reserve and investors, hoping for an eventual cut in interest rates. The unemployment rate inched up in April from 3.8% to 3.9%. It's been under 4% now for 27 months in a row. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Pentagon says the floating U.S. military pier to deliver humanitarian aid to Palestinians sheltering in Gaza could start operations soon. President Biden announced plans for the port in his State of the Union speech in March. This as Israel continues its bombardment of parts of the enclave as it tries to oust Hamas. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin says he doesn't think Hamas will try to attack U.S. forces as they set up and operate that port.
I don't see any indications currently that there is an active intent to do that.
He made the comment at a multilateral meeting of Australia, Japan, and the Philippines in Hawaii yesterday. A group of Meta workers has published an internal letter from December claiming the tech giant is censoring pro-Palestinian sentiments. Rachel Miro of member station KQED has more on the workers' latest move to go public with their grievances.
The letter, signed by more than 450 employees, says Meta has continued to fail the Palestinian community through its policies and lack of investment. The letter goes on to claim the company is censoring employee concerns internally and externally on its social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, and that several MetaMates have resigned over feeling unheard and unsafe. In a statement, a Meta spokesperson writes, "Our goal is to foster a company culture built around mutual respect and inclusivity where everyone can do their best work." For NPR News, I'm Rachel Miro in San Francisco.
The Biden administration says around 100,000 DACA recipients who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children will soon be eligible for health care benefits under the Affordable Care Act. It starts in November and is the final step in a rule that was proposed late last year. Wall Street's trading higher at this hour. The Dow is up 490 points. The Nasdaq up 285. You're listening to NPR News. Researchers studying marijuana are welcoming the Biden administration's move to reclassify the drug as being less dangerous with some medical benefits. They say this change will make it a bit easier for scientists to study the drug, but as NPR's Ritu Chatterjee reports, it won't remove all restrictions.
Marijuana is currently classified as a Schedule 1 substance, which implies it has no accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse and harm. And that makes it very hard for researchers to study the drug, says neuroscientist Stacey Gruber at Harvard Medical School.
So you have very stringent requirements, for example, for storage and security and reporting, all of these things.
She says those restrictions will lift once marijuana is reclassified as Schedule 3 drug, which puts it in the same category as ketamine and Tylenol with codeine. But she cautions that other restrictions on use and research will remain in place as the substance is still illegal at the federal level. Ritu Chatterjee, NPR News.
Congressional leaders unveiled a bipartisan $275 million bill to boost research, doctor training, and public awareness about menopause on Capitol Hill yesterday. Actress Halle Berry was there, and she supports the effort.
The shame has to be taken out of menopause. We have to talk about this very normal part of our life that happens. Our doctors can't even say the word to us, let alone walk us through the journey.
Menopause is something all women experience around midlife, with symptoms including night sweats, hot flashes, and exhaustion. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 470 points, the Nasdaq up 277. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include CFP, Certified Financial Planner Professionals, committed to acting in their clients' best interests. Learn more at letsmakeaplan.org. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and on Fridays we hear from Dan Hoost. He's the spokesperson, the communications director for Sullivan County Government in Monticello. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, happy Friday.
Yes, to you as well.
It's been kind of springy. It's been nice.
It has been, and then we get to the weekend where everyone's looking to get out and enjoy it, and it turns rainy and cold. But that's a Sullivan County spring for you.
Yay, happy spring. All right, let's talk about what's going on in Monticello. The legislature met yesterday, and one of the topics of discussion, in fact, a little bit of a debate, I suppose, was the Ethics Board. Can you tell folks who may not be familiar with what the Ethics Board is there for, and then let us know what happened.
Yeah, the Ethics Board has existed, I think, for less than a decade in Sullivan County. It is not actually required by law. We are required to have an ethics law in place, according to the state, but not required necessarily to have an ethics board. We have to have somebody who is responsible in county government to take ethics complaints, but they theoretically could be bounced up to the state rather than a local ethics board to see it. But our past legislatures have said, no, we need to have a board. It's currently a five-person board, although half the seats, more than half, I think, are empty right now. There are, I believe, there's term limits of 2 3-year terms each. One person has been sitting past that. And basically yesterday, the only agreement I think that the full legislature had was that something needed to be done differently, that it hasn't been operating the way that it was intended. Several legislators feel that it's been weaponized in the past to go after people. The ethics board is not a popular thing for people to sign up for because, your deliberations may not be known, but you're known who you are. And of course, you're dealing sometimes with top elected officials or other people who are in very tricky situations to sort of navigate through. Was this ethical? Was this unethical? It's not as black and white sometimes as it appears to be at face value. So it's been, of course, a lightning rod of controversy over the past few years, especially under the last administration of the legislature. So legislators are like, let's rework it. And then other legislators are like, let's just get rid of it and let the state focus on it. So, I think that probably represents sort of the public's view as well. There's a split of let's make sure that we have local folks handling our ethics issues. And other people are like, no, that's just a Pandora's box. Let's send it up to the state. So only thing that really came out of that now involves the county manager and yours truly. I will be putting out a press release, hopefully today, soliciting candidates for the ethics board, because it looks like that at least for the next month or so, legislators are going to consider and then I think discuss either at full board this month or I'm thinking probably in June exactly where they want to go with the ethics board. So on the one hand, people probably like, well, why are you putting out solicitation for a board that may not exist in the end? Well, it may exist, though, and if they choose for it to continue to exist, and it exists currently right now, we need to have it fully manned with five people on that ethics board for it to work as intended. So hopefully some folks will be willing to weather a little bit of that uncertainty and say, hey, I'm interested in serving. They'll need to send us their resume, letter of interest, any other kind of credentials they think make them useful for that. I'm not saying they need like a college degree or anything like that. It's not some official credentialing thing that we're looking for. But
you don't need a degree in ethics to be on the ethics board. Right.
But the county manager is actually required by the ethics law to vet these candidates. So obviously it's got to be something that we can show on paper when he comes back to legislators and say, here are the candidates that you have, and here's who I recommend that you appoint for the ethics board.
So the manager doesn't appoint them. They're appointed by the legislature?
Right. But based on – well, actually, that was a point of contention yesterday that I still have to figure out. Yes, it was that I think there was some – talk about the county manager appoints them with the legislature's assent. I don't know. There's more I've got to figure out about that as well. Suffice to say, we have not been doing it the way the law is written. That was agreed upon by the legislators that the process wasn't. I mean, some legislators were talking about ethics board candidates that they thought would be good candidates, and other legislators yesterday were saying, you really shouldn't be talking about that in public. That becomes a conflict of interest, because if a legislator is seen as favoring an ethics board member,
then how is it?
Yeah. But that, again, this talks about, it's very complicated, and it's a very difficult, tricky situation, and I'm not selling it well right now to people who might be interested in serving on it, but it is the kind of thing that some of our legislature, and I'm guessing at this point probably the majority, feel is necessary, that we need to have. So we need people who are willing to volunteer for what can possibly be a thankless job that way. But it is an important one that helps us navigate our way through ethical issues that affect not only the people involved, but taxpayers.
How do the ethical issues come up? Does the board, are they charged with looking for them, or are they
no.
referred to?
No, they're referred to. Yeah.
And how are they referred? Can anyone refer to the ethics board?
Yes, they can. Anyone can make a complaint to the ethics board. And I don't know how many they get it. Their deliberations are understandably secret. They're supposed to be. I know that there are times where they don't find the complaint founded, so they don't proceed with it. And then there are other times where they do find the complaint founded. And then they actually dive into the meat and potatoes of it, of actually interviewing people who were involved, gathering the data and the facts, and then making a determination. And
so let's remind folks, too, that this legislature is new as of the beginning of the year. So they're mm-hmm. 5 months in. Mm-hmm. This is part of, you know, establishing their processes and, you know, how they're governing in a way. It is a voluntary thing, though, as you mentioned, to have the ethics board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have this conversation with every new legislature, every newly seated legislature, basically every 4 years around this time. We have this conversation because there's always some changes, some tweaks, things that haven't worked out before, which is why some of the legislators are like, let's not even bother with this further. But like I said, I think there's a majority right now that feels this is important. People need to be trained for this and vetted for this, and we need to really put forth our best faith effort to have this board work as it was intended in the law. And so that's what my job, Josh's job, will be, to help make that happen.
And where could folks learn more about this thankless job?
Well, I'm going to be having some media going out, hopefully today or early next week, about solicitation. We do have some information on our website, but I would mostly encourage folks, if they're interested, to talk to the clerk of the legislature, Annie Martin, and her contact information is on the website there. But 807-0435 is the legislature office, and she can answer specific questions if you have them. And, you know, I want to encourage people to apply, but people of good conscience, of good faith, and people who have patience and tenacity, because that's what this job requires.
I don't mean to make light of it. Just, you know,
but I'm going to be realistic about it, too.
I
don't want to be that person who, well, that wasn't what you told me it was going to be. I don't want to be that person.
Another role that's important, that is necessary during this election year and all election years, actually, the Board of Elections needs election inspectors.
Yes.
So what does an election inspector do? When I go in and vote, are one of the people at the table
yep. there? The yeah, those are the people inspector? There. We sometimes call them poll workers, but their official name is election inspectors. Okay. They're there to answer questions, to register you in, check you in, make sure that you're able to vote in the way that you're you have a right to. They're also there, though, to make sure that no shenanigans go on, that no elected candidates are trying to campaign closer than 100 feet to the polling place, because that's the law. Also making sure that if people have a ballot that they're like, oh, I screwed up on that, I need to get a new ballot, that they go through the proper procedure for that. If somebody has a complaint, that they go through the procedure for that. This is a paid position. You're actually considered a county employee while you're doing this. We pay you $300 for the day. Now, that's 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. typically, so it's a long day, but it's just that one day. Or sometimes, you know, we need them for not just general election, but primary as well. So I think at most it's 3 or 4 days in a year that might be the case. And listen, you could make up to $1,200 for those days. You know, that's not bad. That was just raised from 250. Plus, there's breaks in between. It's not a continual slog. And of course, at a lot of these poll sites, there are quiet periods where you're never alone. You're sitting with somebody else. And, I'm told from the poll workers that one of their chief enjoyment out of that is getting to know not only the people coming through the door and helping them vote, but also just getting to know their fellow election inspectors and sitting there and chatting. There tends to be food involved, so it can be a very nice day. Plus, we will pay you $40 just to train for it, because there's a mandatory training, usually lasts a morning, and we pay you $40 for that. And then you, of course, go on out into Sullivan County's election sites and help democracy work, which to me is a wonderful thing. When I retire, I do intend on being a poll worker because it's just, I consider what they do so critically important. And every time I go to a poll site, they are what really make that visit for me something meaningful. How helpful they are. They don't need to necessarily be grinning from ear to ear. I know it can be a tiring day, but the fact that they're there to make sure I can exercise a right that so many other people in this world don't have, I think that's something pretty special.
And sometimes there's soup.
Oh, yes. I go over to the Calicoon site. I vote in Pennsylvania, but I go to the Calicoon site just for the soup.
That's why I vote at the youth center in yep. Calicoon, uh-huh. And that's why I mentioned that. Also, I would like to just have send a special shout-out to the folks that at the youth center, those election inspectors are always grinning from ear to ear and
good.
Lovely. So they're
I'm
nice.
Glad to hear it, even when they're tired.
Yeah, right. So. But there is a primary coming up June 25th, so yes, you is. Do need folks soon mm-hmm. to sign up for the June 25th primary, which includes, you know, we did have the presidential preference primary in April. This is the June New York primary, mm-hmm. where there are a lot of things on the ballot. There are Senate seats, House seats, folks running for that. There's some school board things. It's a ballot measure, statewide ballot measure, equal protection of the law amendment to the Constitution in New York. So an important June 25th election could use some election inspectors. On that day.
In a couple of weeks, I will be posting sample ballots that show you all of that. But the most important part we shouldn't neglect, if you are interested, call our Board of Elections. That number is 845-807-0400. That's 807-0400. Trust me, they will be thrilled to hear from you.
Also, Restore New York grant funding. There was well, discussion, did you receive the grant funding to rehab some Monticello buildings?
No. This is to make an application. Actually rehab some Monticello buildings. This is very interesting. They're actually looking at putting in an Asian market at the corner of Broadway and Prince Street, sort of across from the post office in Monticello. And then there's another building that is looking at a separate project to put in down near sort of across from Chris Company on East Broadway there. This is actually funding that is available from Empire State Development, state agency, for the Restore New York Communities Initiative, which which is intended to provide financial assistance for the revitalization of commercial and residential properties through the elimination or redevelopment, which is what this is going to be, of blighted structures. These structures are either empty or underutilized, and if we allow that to continue, they're just going to become dilapidated and look ugly and not be of use to anybody. So part of this is I just wanted to mention, of course, that these are interesting projects that we're seeking grant funding for, but also to point out to businesses and developers in the area, if you're looking to rehab or demolish and rebuild a blighted structure, talk to our planning division because they help get this funding. This is something that they brought for our planning division, brought forward to the county legislature. The business owner didn't have to do this. They worked with the planning division. The business owner wasn't even at this meeting yesterday, and the legislators unanimously said, of course we want to fund this put forward this application for funding. So it's out there. You just need to take advantage of it. And how do you find out what's available? I tell people all the time, start with our planning division. Give them a call. Send them an email. The information is all on our website. There are more grant programs and low-interest loan programs than they may realize that we can help them with. And we are all about economic development and rehabbing our downtowns. This resolution that just passed yesterday and will pass at the full board meeting later this month is testament to that, that we want to get this grant funding, and we are paying the $500 application fee for that.
Ooh, great. So the resolution, so this, the planning department can help with like identifying some of these funding opportunities at the state level, but then the legislature approves the application and the allocation, I guess, from the planning department or?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the planning division is now got, well, will, once it's formally voted on by the full board later this month, authorization to actually make application for funding. I haven't yet heard an exact amount of funding. I would imagine it's in the millions of dollars that they're going to be asking the state for. But the planning division basically took this and ran with it on behalf of the business owners to say to the legislature, this is worth supporting. The planning division did the vetting that needed to be done, made sure that the business owner filled out all the necessary paperwork, and said to the legislature, we think this is worth applying for funding for and paying a $500 application fee for. And the legislature said, you go get them.
Yeah. And also showing a desire, as you said, for, economic development and, cleaning up some of these blighted buildings, rehab some of these buildings that need it.
Yeah. And this can happen anywhere in Sullivan County. We just need those developers and business owners to come tell us what their plans are. And then we can say, here's how we can help.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, communications director from Sullivan County Government. We'll take a break and have more right after this. This is Radio Chatsko.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Cassie from Rare Pear Radio, playing you the fruit of all things sweet, Fridays, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., mostly female artists, from rock, funk, punk, pop, and more. All rare, only on WJFF Radio Catskill.
Radio station here, just turn it on, you'll be gone.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're speaking with Dan Hoost, as we do every Friday. He's the communications director for Sullivan County Government. Dan, the Oscars were just a couple months ago. The Tony nominations were out this week. And apparently the award season continues in Sullivan County. There is a couple of awards from government.
Boy, I would love it if we won an Oscar or a Tony, but that would probably be for a performance that, I don't know. I'd be careful what you wish for, Dan. Although it's been fun, I remember writing a story when I was with the Democrat about a local who won an Oscar. So we've got some really talented people here in Sullivan County.
We do, including those in the budget office.
It does, in our county government facility as well.
Best performance by a budget office. Right. Those two.
So our budget office, which is staffed by the just retired Janet Young and also Jenny Sush and Anna Marie Novello, and overseen, of course, by our county manager, Josh Potosik, and deputy county manager, Michelle Huck. They just won for the 9th time in a row the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award, which comes from the Government Finance Officers Association. This is basically the national association that supports and advocates for the finance people in our governments. They're the ones that work very much behind the scenes, but have an outsized impact on taxpayers. And they take very seriously in our budget office the fact that they have that kind of an impact. Jenny, in particular, with Janet and Josh's blessing, a couple years ago started really focusing on the presentation of the county's annual budget, which is tentatively proposed usually around October it debuts. And then in December, legislators actually go for the, adopt it. They adopt the budget. And she has gone to this very interactive kind of setup that you can create your own graphs and data from what we include in a budget that usually is about, I think, 300 or pages long, give or take. And this interactive ability allows lay people like me, who are good with words and lousy with numbers, to find what we're looking for right off the bat. Well, we submitted that to the Government Finance Officers Association, along with about 1,700 other municipalities. And we were one of the few, and I think one of the only, especially in rural upstate New York, to win this award of Distinguished Budget Presentation. They judged us on, you know, it being a policy document, of course it is, and the financial planning, but also a guide to our operations and just a good communication to the general public, lay people, about how we do what we do. And I'm not going to say that it's like as absorbing a read as the latest, I don't know, James Patterson novel or something like that. But if you want to get a good understanding of how county government operates and where your tax dollars are going, take a look at this. Take a look at the interactive version. We'll make it as easy for you as we possibly can. We want to be transparent. We want to be accountable. And the Government Finance Officers Association says, you guys have done that. You're very proficient at that. And here is your award, 9th year in a row that we've won that. Well,
congratulations. That's amazing. And the Finance Officer of the Year award goes to...
Yes. This is interesting. County Treasurer Nancy Buck. We should have had a drum roll there.
I know. I should have been prepared.
That's okay.
Some orchestral music.
Nancy, of course, most everyone knows and loves Nancy Buck, our elected county treasurer. She is very active at the state level with her fellow treasurers, including in the New York State County Treasurer and Finance Officers Association. Well, in recognition of her leadership and her service, not only locally but to that organization as well, she just won the Finance Officer of the Year Award. It's a statewide award. My understanding is she is the only one who won it. For this year, and so we're so proud and excited for her. We congratulate her for that. It's very well deserved. She runs an extremely tight ship at the county treasurer's office, not in a negative way. Her staff love working for her, but in a way where if I have any questions about taxes, tax collection, how things are determined and calculated with tax bills, she is a go-to person. She's a treasure of a treasure. I had to say it.
How long did you work on that? How long have you been waiting to use that?
Actually, the other day I saw in one of the town offices, if you have any questions about taxes, call the county treasure office.
Treasure.
Yeah, that was what spurred. I laughed. I was like, oh, well, sort of. I guess that's what a treasure is. They keep the treasury where the treasure used to be. So,
you know when someone wins an Academy Award and then they're on their next project, it usually says like Academy Award winner before their name.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to do that with Nancy Buck? But like moving on now, like Finance Officer of the Year Award winner, Nancy Buck?
No,
Finance officer of the year.
I'm going to stick with a treasure of a treasurer. I'll put that above her door.
I think that's better. I also want the T-shirt.
Catchy.
I want the T-shirt.
She's going to kill me when she hears this.
She will. Might just drive over. So the latest Parks and Recreation brochure, hot off the presses. What can one find in the Parks and Recreation brochure?
Well, first off, you can find our new slogan, Discover, Explore, Connect, and Play. That was something that was put together by myself, the Parks Director, Brian Scarterfield, and the Assistant Parks Director, a new person I love working with. Fiona Feltman is her name. She had previously been Lake Superior State Park, the manager for us there, since we operated, even though it's a state park. But she's now on our team full-time, not just during the season, and she brings such an energy and an enthusiasm and creativity to this. And she was like, we need to get our Parks and Rec brochure updated. It's been years since it was. And so it's available online. We have it on our social media. It's available on our parks page at sullivanny.us. We also are distributing actual printed brochures all over the place. We hope to have them in all the libraries and other tourist locations shortly here. It, of course, goes into detail about all of our interesting parks, not just Lake Superior, which is the one everyone knows about in Bethel, but our Minisink Battleground Park, mm-hmm. which is our only Revolutionary War skirmish area in Sullivan County. Our D&H Canal Linear Park, the Delaware and Hudson Canal ran through a good portion of Sullivan County and was the first million-dollar enterprise in the nation. It's 200 years old, and you can see stones that were set along the towpath 200 years ago. I think that's pretty cool. Plus, we have a museum down in Summitville that is staffed during the season. We also have the Stone Arch Bridge Historical Park, arguably our most photographed part of Sullivan County, maybe only second to the Woodstock site.
It's on the cover of the brochure.
Mm-hmm. We have our county museum in Hurleyville, which is just a fascinating place to explore in an old schoolhouse in downtown Hurleyville. We have the Livingston Manor Covered Bridge Park, one of our only covered bridges that are still existing, and that one is still in use. You can drive over it as well as picnic around it and fish underneath it. And then we also have our Fort Delaware Museum of Colonial History, which is now operated by the Delaware Company, which is our county historian John Conway and his wife Debbie. They have a nonprofit that they are under contract with us to run Fort Delaware, which I remember going to as a kid and still get such excitement when I get to visit it as an adult.
I know there are apps and things for this, but I'm excited by the fact that there's a handy-dandy map of the county mm-hmm. that's on page two, it looks like, which is great. And it shows you the area and the roads where things are located, but also gives you an idea of the breadth of these museums all over the county, not clustered in one spot.
No, it is all over the county, and you should visit every single one of them. I have. They are all interesting and uniquely their own.
Another thing, I don't think we had this scheduled to talk about. When I went to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification page of Sullivan County Government, SullivanNY.us, also lifeguard courses, they're still mm-hmm. signing up for lifeguard courses.
This is another wonderful thing about Fiona. She is certified as a lifeguard trainer, which I don't know that we've ever had on our county ranks before, at least not in a full-time position. Before, we wanted and needed lifeguards because we have that beach at Lake Superior State Park, but they would have to find training elsewhere. Now we can provide that. I'm not exactly sure where she does it, if it's at like Cartwright or at Lake Superior, but she handles all the setup of that. It makes it much more efficient, and I would hope in the end a little easier for us to find what are very valuable people, lifeguards. There's a big competition for lifeguards, especially since mm-hmm. we have a water park right in our backyard, too. So, but I think, if I understand correctly, we've got almost all our seasonal positions filled. But if you are interested in lifeguarding, we are interested in talking to you.
Yeah, there's some lifeguard certification courses that are offered through the American Red Cross starting May 20th. There's some in June as well. Also, recertification, May 29th, and then CPRO recertification, May 30th. Those are for professional rescuers that are helpful, of course, in times of these kinds of water emergencies. Mm-hmm. Again, more information at SullivanNY.us. We're talking to Dan Hoost. He's the communications director at Sullivan County Government. Also, sign up has begun for Emergency Services Youth Academy this summer.
Yes, this is really cool. This is a new initiative, a partnership between our Bureau of Fire, which is under our Public Safety Division, and our Youth Bureau, which is under our Community Resources Division. They are partnering to offer this Emergency Services Youth Academy. It's going to be July 22nd through the 26th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for 14, 15, and 16-year-olds who are interested, or their parents think they might be interested, in learning about emergency services in Sullivan County. This isn't just for firefighters, however. This is also for people who are interested in law enforcement or in becoming an EMT or driving an ambulance. How do they do what they do? And you'll get a chance, if you're a 14, 15, 16-year-old, to talk to the real people, see the stuff in action, and learn some of the techniques and skills that they employ regularly on both a volunteer and a paid basis. It will be held, my understanding is, at our training facility over near the county airport in Swan Lake, which has this really cool fire training tower. It's a building they can set on fire again and again and again to train firefighters. Using the jaws of life, this Jaws Jenga, I think, where you'll actually be able to use this thing that usually peels open cars with people trapped inside. But instead, I think it'll be more of a game just to see how precisely you can use this on a gigantic Jenga tower. CPR first aid certification, emergency vehicles. That's always the coolest part for me, those lights and sirens. team building, search and rescue, and a lot more. All you have to do is give a call, 845-807-0509. That goes to our training center folks, 0509, or email SCESYA, that's SCESYA at sullivanny.us. Or if you come across online or in print, we have a QR code and that links right to our registration form. You can sign up directly that way. We already have had, I think, about half a dozen people sign up for this. Okay. We want to see a lot more sign up for it because we hope this will be so successful we can offer it every year. And, of course, you know, the what's the word I'm looking for? The ulterior motive here is to actually get these kids interested in joining our volunteer ranks or even making a career out of it.
Well, you know, we've heard there's a shortage of volunteer firefighters, there's a shortage of police officers, emergency personnel. So this is a good thing for youth to explore. Are you have you done this before?
Is this the first year?
Yeah, that's great.
This is the first time, and it's just an initiative of some of the people who have recently joined our ranks in these different departments and saying, how can we even more creatively get people involved? We have this Join Sullivan Fire Rescue nonprofit, has its own Sullivan or Facebook site. It's affiliated with our Bureau of Fire, and that's been very successful. So successful, actually, our fire coordinator, John Hauschild, just I think a week or two ago, was down in White Plains at a statewide conference telling people how we've been successful in recruiting young people into our ranks because everybody around the state and the nation is hurting for volunteers.
Let's talk about litter. There was the
trash talk,
trash talking. There was the, so the folks are clear, you know, Upper Delaware Council did their litter sweep, which was the different towns going through and gathering, very successful. About 375 volunteers, participated in that, fourth annual Upper Delaware litter sweep. Of course, unfortunately, litter doesn't end there. The county has a litter pluck program so that, you know, if you want to go out and help continue to keep things clean, you can pluck the litter and take it to one of the transfer stations for your charge.
How much litter could a litter plucker pluck if a litter plucker could pluck litter? Boy, that was dangerous.
How long have you been waiting for that
one? I was waiting for that one, too.
You know,
I am just on a roll today, right? Anyway, my apologies to the listening audience. Anyway, our litter pluck is not a particular event. Like the Upper Delaware's was, or I think Town of Fallsburg is having one too. There are all these litter pluck events. Highly encourage you to be involved. Absolutely. Ours exists from now through the end of October. Anytime you've picked litter off the road and get enough to bring it in a bag to one of our transfer stations. We have coupons there. You just need to tell us it's roadside litter. We'll give you those coupons for free, and it means you can dump that bag of litter for free. This is a way for us to encourage at a countywide level keeping our roadsides as clean as possible, because we appreciate the fact that it takes time. And if you think about the gas and the bag and everything, the money is involved for people to voluntarily go out and pick litter off the sides of our roads. We are extremely grateful, and we don't want it to cost them anything more than it already has. So just bring it to our transfer station. Tell us it's a bag of litter. We'll give you the coupon. You dump it for free. And we thank you very much.
Don't have to have a special bag or anything that you get from you guys.
Just coupon.
You get the coupon. Okay, got
it. And the coupon's available at your town and village halls as well. Or at our offices, our parks and DPW office in the government center if you want to stop by there.
Let's keep it clean.
Please.
Finally, before we go, the Americana and Bluegrass Concert is at the County Museum this Sunday at 2.
Mm-hmm. This is our increasingly popular, in fact, amazingly popular, first Sunday concert series at our County Museum. Of course, Aldo and Carol Troiani, who we always talk about here because of their connection here, but they are such wonderful folks that we have working at our County Museum in Hurleyville. And because of their passion for performance through their band Little Sparrow and through their connections that they have in the musical world, they bring in these outstanding acts, almost all of them with some sort of local connection. Either they live here or they've been here. And they really live up to what I think our Woodstock legacy has always been, that we are a county that loves music and has always been a place where people want to sing and dance and play. And I'm just grateful that we do it in a place that you wouldn't necessarily think we would do it in. It is in our County Museum, which, since it's a converted school, has a gymnasium there with a stage, and we set up chairs, and you get to listen to very talented musicians, oftentimes who have stories to tell, not just music to share. And then you get to mix in with your neighbors and friends there, meet new people. There's usually refreshments. And of course, the icing on that cake is that you can then wander around the museum and take a look at all the fascinating exhibits. We have room upon room of Sullivan County history that I guarantee you didn't know about, because I'm a local history buff and I still learn new things when I go there every single time.
Who's playing on Sunday?
This is going to be Kevin Eag and his wife Sue Stegmaier, husband-wife couple. They play Americana and bluegrass music. And they are going to, I think, be quite entertaining, especially since, Aldo and Carol are a husband-wife team as well, who I think might play with them towards the end of the concert.
Yeah, so. I was reading a little bit about Kevin and Sue. And Sue, very interesting, trained as a classical pianist.
Yes.
And also then learned to play the bass, and is also a professional horse trainer and instructor.
Yes.
And has a book about keys to the kingdom of dressage.
And I bet she's going to talk about that while you're there. So you learn things. It is not your ordinary concert. And best of all, it's free.
It's free.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Dan Hoost.
You're welcome.
You're a treasure. I couldn't think of anything. The communications director treasure? I don't know. It's not as catchy as the treasure of a treasurer.
Yeah. The best I've gotten was from a friend, a coffee mug that has Yoda on it and says, Yoda best communication director. Sorry, had to go there. It's Dad Joke Friday, right?
Dad Joke Friday with Dan Hoost. We're gonna relabel this segment. Thank you, Dan Hoost, communications director from Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday for some news and some humor. Thanks for bringing
my pleasure.
Thanks for bringing a little lightness to county government as well.
Always fun. All right. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. We'll take a break, and when we come back, reaction from the town of Forestburg about allegations from the New York State Attorney General's office in a zoning dispute. This is Radio Chatsco.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're on the go, and Radio Catskill can go with you. listen live to Radio Catskill on your phone. Just type wjffradio.org into your browser and listen wherever you are. Stay up to date on local news, culture, and NPR on the go on your phone with Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Town officials in Forestburg here in Sullivan County are contesting allegations from the New York State Attorney General's office that they implemented zoning regulations specifically to obstruct a housing development intended for Hasidic Orthodox Jews. The attorney representing Forestburg asserts that their zoning laws allow religious uses across all districts, contradicting claims of targeted exclusion. Jason Dole has more with a conversation from Phil Pantuso of the Times Union.
This is kind of a long-running story, but a couple of weeks ago, the state attorney general's office warned leaders of Forestburg that zoning regulations they adopted last year, specifically for places of worship, may be discriminatory because they appear to have been designed to block a large development project proposed by developers with Hasidic Orthodox Jewish principles. So this comes... The Attorney General's intervention is coming as Forestburg town leaders and the developers have been battling in court. I said that this is kind of a long-running story. This court battle has been going on for 4 years, really ever since the developers bought the project, which is called the Lost Lake Resort, for several million dollars. I think it was $13 million. And it had previously been approved to hold more than 2,000 residences in an area of 3 square miles. The developers filed a federal lawsuit earlier this year in U.S. District Court, alleging that Forestburg County officials sought to block them from developing that property by enacting what they described as burdensome zoning regulations that would require a minimum of 5 acres for places of worship and lot line setbacks that are far larger than what other similar building uses are required to meet. So that's been working its way through the courts. And the news here essentially is that the state attorney general's office seems to be siding with the developers, at least with their position. Earlier this week, Forestburg town leaders disputed the attorney general's office's claims about those regulations, saying that they in fact were not crafted to target the developers of the project and that there is no wholesale exclusion of religious uses from any district as the as Letitia James letter claims. So this is, you know, it's just kind of the latest battle between town leaders and, you know, specifically Hasidic Orthodox Jewish developers. We've seen this play out in this, you know, this is in Forestburg, obviously, but we've seen this play out with the Greens at Chester project in Orange County a few years ago. I'm sure this won't be the last one.
And if you could just, this all hinges on discrimination against places of worship. And it sounds like this is a residential community, but I guess I would assume then there are places of worship within that community. Is that where these issues overlap?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that the proposal will include a place of worship, which the town is saying means that it then needs to meet these new stricter zoning regulations. That's my understanding of the proposal.
Your article is saying, hey, the town of Forestburg is kind of firing back against the AG on this, pushing back. But ultimately, when it's the state AG and telling you to do something and you're a town and you're pushing back, that winds up in court, right? That's how these things get settled.
Well, yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is already in federal court. And it's going to get settled by, a U.S. District Court judge at some point. I don't know the timeline on that. The Attorney General's office here, the State Attorney General, she's essentially acting as She's sort of, it's not exactly like a friend of the court brief, but it's a similar type of role that her office is playing here, essentially lending what she would claim to be her expertise and certainly her office's opinion based on state law governing zoning and religious discrimination about whether or not these new regulations fall within, you know, legal bounds.
That's Philip Hantuso, the managing editor of the Hudson Valley section of the Times Union, speaking to Jason Dole on the Local Edition. You can read more of that article at thetimesunion.com, and also you can read it here at our website, wjffradio.org. Quick break for us, and we'll be back with culture reporter Valerie Manzi's preview of master caricaturists John Cash's works at the Wayne County Alliance.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Arts Alliance is presenting Turning Pages, an exhibition of 2D and 3D work by artist John Cash through June 15th at the WCAA Gallery in Honesdale. Turning Pages draws from 4 decades of illustration for the New York Times, The New Yorker, Wall Street Journal, Time, Rolling Stone, GQ, and many other publications. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Wayne County Arts Alliance Gallery co-curator Jay Hostetler about the exhibit.
Good morning, Jay, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Hello, Valerie. I really appreciate you having us on this interview.
Well, you have a very, very interesting gallery exhibit at Wayne County Arts Alliance in Honesdale. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. On Friday, April the 26th, we had an opening called Turning Pages, an exhibition of not only two-dimensional but also three-dimensional work by John Cash, who is a Honesdale resident and very well known internationally as an illustrator, a caricaturist, and he's basically grounded in traditional draftsmanship, which is an amazing thing to see in the gallery with all the talk of artificial intelligence and being able to have that artificial intelligence create images and stories. This is hand-drawn illustrations of characters.
And you mentioned both 2D and 3D?
Exactly. The reason this exhibition is called Turning Pages is John Cash has been an illustrator for over 4 decades and is very well known for his celebrities and writers and musicians and the illustrations he does. But October in 2023, he released a book called The Mysteries, which was a collaboration with Bill Watterson, who is known from the Calvin and Hobbes cartoons that were syndicated in many newspapers for many years. And this book is a beautiful bound illustration of not only drawings that John has created, but also models. He's created little landscapes and faces and masks and things that are all on display, which appear in the book.
Yes, I read a little bit about that collaboration, and they worked together and things got a little bumpy here and there. And he then went to clay figures.
Exactly. That's what it was a 4-year collaboration, according to John. And they went back and forth and sort of had to decide on what they wanted to see visually and what the narrative of the book would be. And right now it's on the New York Times bestseller list. So we're very proud to host John and his Turning Pages exhibition, because it really is a unique experience. Not only are the models and heads and faces in the show, but in the illustration, what we like to see is that John has put together in display cases illustrations that he's created from the early draft of the drawing to the final, the piece that he's finished. So I think as a gallery, it's not only a beautiful experience to walk through and see the work, but also see the process of what John goes through when he's creating these illustrations.
I'm very intrigued and can't wait to get over there to see it.
Yeah, the Turning Pages show with John Cash is on view until June 15th. We've given this special exhibition a good two-month reign in our gallery, so to speak. And our gallery is open Thursday through Sunday, 11 to 4. And then on Saturdays, we're open till 6.
Tell me what else you have coming up.
So after John's show, as you know, we have two galleries. We've got a members gallery, which is on the second floor, which serves as our group shows for our artists. And then we also have the ground floor gallery, which we show one- and two-person shows.
Who is there now, by the way?
Well, John has both floors. So we kind of split it up so the downstairs is all the illustrations. And then when you go upstairs, it's a completely different show because of the lighting and the figures and things that are in that show. It's kind of dark and moody. So there's a nice contrast between the two floors. But after John Cash, we're going to be hosting the Studio Tour, which is an annual event that the Wayne County Arts Alliance provides. And I believe this year we've got about 22 artists who are going to be on the Studio Tour. It's quite popular in Wayne County, and we're really excited to host that on the ground floor. And we also have on the members' second floor gallery is going to be a fiber artwork show featuring two of our members, Katerina Lichman and Buff McAllister. And their fiber art is not like anything you've ever seen. It's almost like abstract painting, quite beautiful. And then coming up after the Studio Tour, we have a members curated show, which we've incorporated this year in our calendar, just because we've got so many members who've got so many great ideas that we've kind of opened up the gallery to allow them to curate their own show, whether it's a one-person show or a combination of other artists that come together and put the show together. So we've got Dan Nelson, who is the owner, proprietor of the Happy Tattoo right next to the gallery. And all of his tattoos are original art, and all the tattooists that he employs create their own original art. So we're going to feature that art, and that's beginning in August.
Interesting.
And we're also going to try. We also have a member who's a neon artist, so we're going to incorporate the neon and the tattoo artist's work. And for one weekend only, we're going to offer tattoos on the second floor by these tattooists who are from actually all over the United States. Following exhibition after that, we've got a pretty full calendar, Valerie. Is Samuel Green, who people probably know.
Yes.
Who is a Honesdale local artist who does amazing, beautiful paper sculptures. And so we're just opening the downstairs, and Sam has some amazing ideas of how she's going to fill that gallery space with her paper sculpture. If anyone hasn't seen them, they're huge. Yeah. They go from floor to ceiling. They travel. They move. And mm-hmm. This one in particular, we're thinking is actually going to break through, not figuratively, through the second floor and also continue on the second floor gallery. So it's going to be a really interesting exhibition for her. And then we close out the year with our Art Under 100, which is our annual holiday show and featuring all of the members' artists' work. So we're going to take over both floors of the gallery starting on Black Friday through the month of December. And we'll have Art Under 100 for gifts for the holiday season.
Wonderful. Well, you have a very full calendar. So thank you very much for taking the time to share this with us.
One more time, the website is WayneCountyArtsAlliance.org, where you can see this calendar for our year and upcoming events that the Wayne County Arts Alliance is involved in.
Thank you again, Jay.
Absolutely. And thanks again for this ability to speak to your listeners, I should say.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can listen live at any time on our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Bradley Cooper, welcome to Fresh Air.
Tina Fey, welcome back.
Bryan Cranston, welcome.
Sarah Silverman,
Karl Rove,
Hillary Clinton,
Stephen Sondheim,
Robert Redford,
Lena Dunham, welcome to Fresh Air.
Welcome to Fresh Air.
Listen to Fresh Air Monday through Thursday at 2 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello, streaming live at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Partly sunny and not as warm today, a high of 66. Tonight's low 43, and then tomorrow a high of 59 with a couple of afternoon showers and a little rain later in the evening, too. Sunday is interesting, chilly, a high of only 48 with the rain throughout the day. And then Monday, even more interesting, clearing and much warmer, high of 71. On Point is next, and Democracy Now! Is at noon. It's 11 o'clock.